Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to conclude Brahma's prayers tonight and then continue with what happens afterwards. Lord Brahma, we did this yesterday with his daughter and how old is your daughter? Nine?
Yes.
How old are you?
Ten.
Seven?
Ten.
Okay. So you know more than she knows because you're ten, she's only nine, right? Okay. Here's some things that we discussed about Brahma. Here's five things. Firstborn living being in the whole universe. He created the universe, or he engineered the universe. He put the universe together. Three, he received Vedic knowledge, and he gave Vedic knowledge to his disciplic succession. That's three. We heard this in the course of chapter 14. He's in charge of the mode of passion. He's the Shaktivesh avatar. He's in charge of, he presides over creation, the principle of creation, which is Rajagun. So he's one of the avatar forms of the Lord in that capacity. And a fifth thing that he does is he's the presiding deity of intelligence. You like to do well in school, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you have intelligence, but if Lord Brahma does not empower your intelligence to do well in school, you won't be able to. But fortunately, he usually does that with us, gives us some intelligence. He does that on behalf of and empowered to do what he does by Supersoul, Krishna. So those are some of the functions of Lord Brahma. There are five of them. And when he completes the creation, he stays involved. You'll hear in today's text. When he completes creation, it's not like he just twiddles his thumbs and has nothing to do. He's still involved with it. He's involved in a number of ways, but you'll hear some of that this evening. And from time to time, he will come. We heard in the Govardhan Leela, because that's what we're discussing in the morning, those chapters dealing with Govardhan Leela. We heard that when Indra, who really messed up and was going to get a big reaction, he wanted to come to Krishna and apologize. Lord Brahma advised him to go with one of his dear devotees, Surabhi. So Brahma went to Surabhi and said, Surabhi, here's some service for you. Go with Brahma. Go with Indra. So she did. So it's mentioned that Brahma has a second residence in addition to Brahmaloka. You know where Brahmaloka is? The very top of the universe, right? Inside the shell of the universe at the very top. That's Brahma's planet. But he has like a second home. You know, some people have second homes. So his second home, we heard this morning, is at the top of Mount Sumeru. Have you heard of Mount Sumeru before? Okay, now you're going to hear about it. In the fifth canto Srimad Bhagavatam, we discussed this morning, but fifth canto Srimad Bhagavatam gives a description, this latter portions, latter chapters of the fifth canto describe Vedic cosmology, the structure of the universe. It's really interesting and it's very difficult to understand. But one of the things it describes is, while the lower half of the universe is filled with Garbhadak ocean, the upper half of the universe has planets. And there's 14 planetary systems, 7 lower, 7 upper. And this earthly region is in that 7 upper. It's the lowermost of those 7 upper. So going from the bottom up, it's number 8 out of 14. And it's called, in the fifth canto Bhagavatam, Bhumandala. Bhumandala is the flat earth conception. Not literally totally flat, but as opposed to Bhugola, which means a sphere. Vedic cosmology speaks of Bhumandala. And Bhumandala has a series of islands and oceans, and then islands and oceans in ring-shaped pattern. And the central island is named... What's the name of the central island? Jambudweep. And Jambudweep has at the center Mount Sumeru. It's a mountain of gold. No one has seen a mountain of gold. And it's really tall. It's 100,000 yojanas tall. One yojan equals 8 miles. 800,000 miles tall. No one has seen a mountain like that. Not only that, it's an upside-down mountain. The narrow part is towards the bottom, and the broad part is towards the top, and it's flat on the top. It's a picture of the universe from a plane of higher consciousness, or it's the one way to describe what it is. It's the universal form. Our sense perception has no experience of a mountain so tall, of a mountain that's all gold, and a mountain that's inverted, like an inverted cone, like an ice cream cone that's upside down, where the big part is at the top and the skinny part is at the bottom. A mountain like that? No such thing. No such thing. But Brahma has an abode at the top of Mount Sumeru along with the protectors of the directions, 8 in number, and then his abode, his place is in the center. So that's another thing that Brahma does. Along with the protectors of the directions, he has a residence at the top of Sumeru. So he came to visit Krishna in Vrindavan. And when he came to visit Krishna in Vrindavan, he saw the killing of Agasura. And we're going to hear some more about Agasura in this chapter shortly. And when he saw that, he was amazed at the power of Krishna, and then the simplicity of Krishna after killing Agasura. He went and had lunch with the cowherd boys, and the calves were grazing in the grass nearby. And he wanted to test Krishna to see the extent of his potencies, and what he saw resulted in his realization that Krishna's potencies are literally without limit, limitless potencies. That's a lot of potency. Anyway, then he offered prayers. So we're going to hear the last of his prayers before he returns back to Brahmaloka. And this is, should be, text number 40. In the text 39, he was expressing to Krishna request for Krishna's permission to return and back to Brahmaloka so he could continue his very important service, which is overseeing the universe. So here's text 40. My dear Sri Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus-like Vrishni dynasty. Vrishni dynasty is Andaka, Bhoja, and Vrishni dynasty. It's the dynasty in which Krishna appeared. And expand the great oceans consisting of the earth, the demigods, and the brahmanas, and the cows. You dispel the darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists, and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. Of course, after that, he's going to leave his body. He won't be able to offer obeisances. But depending, so there's this very detailed explanation of the destination of Brahma after the universe is over. And the explanation is he doesn't always go back to Godhead. There's multiple options. But that's another class. So don't ask me what the other options are, because we'll go there. Purport from the BBT publication. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, Lord Brahma is here engaged in ecstasy of Nam Sankirtan. We didn't discuss this yet, did we? No, okay. Glorifying various holy names of Lord Krishna that indicate his variegated pastimes. Lord Krishna expertly suppressed the demoniac population of the earth, which became unbearable with the advent of demoniac politicians like Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Shishupal. Similarly, in modern society, there are many so-called God-fearing people who are actually attracted to demoniac existence. Such persons become enlivened with the setting of the sun and go out in the darkness to enjoy life in restaurants, nightclubs, discotheques, hotels, and so on, which are all simply meant for illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. Then there are those who openly defy God and his laws, declaring themselves atheists and demons. Both the covert and the overt enemies of the Lord constitute an unholy burden for the earth, and Lord Krishna descends to expertly remove this burden. Paragraph. Here, Lord Brahma indirectly states, that Lord Krishna should remove Brahma's own subtle atheism, which has led him to try to exert illusory power over Lord Krishna. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Brahma, in his shame, felt himself to be like a Brahma Rakshasa from such a loka, who had come to the earth to disturb Lord Krishna and his intimate friends and calves. Brahma is lamenting that although Lord Krishna is most exalted, the Lord of all lords, because he had appeared before Brahma in such a simple and innocent feature, decorated with a stick, a conch shell, ornaments, red clay, a peacock feather, and so on, and sporting with his cowherd boyfriend, Brahma dared to challenge him. concerning Brahma's prayers, of which this verse is the conclusion, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states, quote, "May these prayers of Brahma, which take away all doubts and broadcast all the definitive conclusions of devotional service, become the expert craftsmanship of the foundation of my consciousness." End of BBT commentary. So there's a few by others. By Vishwanath, Brahma states, "If you don't want to speak to me because I am an offender, then at least show mercy by giving the nectar of your glance. By this meal, I will be able to maintain my life for the rest of the kalpa." And what's the kalpa? It's the day of Brahma. And the day of Brahma is how long? Yeah. 4,320,000,000 years, solar years. That's one kalpa, one day of Brahma. And then at night. Expressing this feeling, Brahma offered his respects to Krishna. Quote, "You are the sun," or a glance with the right eye, "you are the sun who makes the lotuses of the Vrishni dynasty bloom." It's a metaphor. At night, lotuses close. When the sun comes up during the day, lotuses open. So be like, you are like the sun for the lotus of the Vrishni dynasty that gets joyful by your appearing within the Vrishni dynasty. I am an offspring of such a lotus. Therefore, you should show mercy and make me blossom also. You are the moon, or the glance with the left eye, or you're the moon who is the increaser of the ocean, because with the movements of the moon, the tide comes and goes. For all the inhabitants of earth, for the devas, birds, cows of Vrindavan, giving them nourishment, be merciful to me, the lowest of the devas, and nourish me as well. So both sun and the moon. You are the destroyer of dense darkness, Sarvarahara. In the form of atheism, and you take away the atheism in me, which took the form of trying to spread illusion to you, my master, so that I will not make such mistakes again. Unquote. Again, speaking Brahma, though you killed the demons on this earth, you bless them by having them enter your body. You should then purify me also with that punishment, since I am a Brahma Rakshasa, having done away with your calves and cowherd boys. The servant can live happily upon seeing either the mercy or curse of his master, but cannot live at all seeing his master disinterested. If you do not give mercy, then at least curse me. I should satisfy Krishna, whom previously I thought was acting improperly as God, by happily playing with the cowherd boys, with decoration of gunja, seeds, clay, peacock feather, and cane. I pay obeisances to you, decorated with gunja beads, and wearing arka flowers of Vrindavan, which are normally forbidden for worship. I pay obeisances to you who are worthy of my worship, or are worthy to bestow mercy or withdraw it from me. Conclusion. May these prayers of Lord Brahma, which are capable of destroying all the influence of the material world, which are the ocean of all conclusions about devotion, remain impressed upon my heart. Now that's Vishwanath praying, not Brahma praying. Jiva Goswami. In order to offer respects with realization of his powers and with reverence, Brahma first calls out using the name of the Lord's Swarup. Then he calls out names depicting his birth and activities, revealing external particulars. Vrishni Kula. He addresses Krishna like that. Within the family of Vrishni, Vrishni Kula. Refers to Vasudev's family and Nanda's family, as was proved earlier. According to the usage in the text, the term primarily refers to Nanda's family. Brahma referred to Krishna as Pashupanga Jaya, or the son of a cowherd, in the very first verse. So he's just making this connection from the first verse now to the final verse. This son of the Vrishnis, it specifically refers to the son of Nanda. Though the word earth is not modified, the intention is to link it with the cows and brahmanas, since it is well known that the Lord appears on earth to benefit the cows and the brahmanas. There's another verse in the text. Ud Dharma means Dharma which opposes the Lord. The Rakshasas, such as Kamsa, are the promoters of Ud Dharma, Dharma that opposes the Lord. Metaphors of the moon as the cause of increasing the ocean and sun, the nourisher of the lotus, are given to suggest that the Lord produces all auspiciousness and to suggest his glorification with great fame and power. O Lord, as Krishna, your Swami Bhagavan, you are worthy of worship from the sun, which reveals the planets of Bhur, Bhuva, and Sva, up to Mahavaikuntha. You alone can show what I saw, and no one else. You are able to do everything. You are worthy of worship, spreading over a kalpa, or my day. A kalpam can refer to the ornaments of Krishna, such as his gunja garlands, peacock feather, and yogurt rice in his left hand. Arkam can refer to the flowers of the arka tree, which should not be offered to the Lord. I offer respects to you, along with your ornaments, and even to the flower of the arka tree, which is generally not respectable. And his concluding statement, because of the mercy of the people who received the mercy of Chaitanya, I have explained, according to my inclination, the prayers of Brahma for their bliss. The bliss is the people who have received the mercy of Chaitanya. That's a nice way to end, huh? Now, Sanatana Goswami's commentary. O Krishna, endowed with various splendors in all matters, endowed with Sri, he attracts everyone's hearts. He is excellent in all ways, completely. This is clarified with the other terms addressing Krishna. The reason for this is that he is Bhagavan, who displays all powers. Paragraph. Brahma praises in the form of Sankirtan of the Lord's names. And after having developed the highest bhakti, that's Brahma, summarizing in one verse the purpose of all the avatars, and offers respect at the Lord's lotus feet. by his appearance, the Lord destroyed the grief of Vasudeva and the Yadus and gave them bliss, like the lotus giving up being closed in darkness and blossoming with the rising of the sun. This was described previously. Quote, now this is, he makes reference to an earlier, this is chapter 14. So chapter 2 of Canto 10 is the prayers of the demigods to Krishna within the womb. So he refers to two verses from chapter 2. He manifested the effulgence of the Lord and became as bright as the sun. And that's text 17. The heavy burden of the demons upon this earth is immediately removed by your appearance. Paragraph. He caused increase in the earth, devatas, and the ocean of cows in Vraja by destroying adharma and increasing dharma. He eradicated suffering and produced bliss. Even though by increase in the earth, automatically there's increase in the brahmanas and cows on the earth, they are individually listed, that brahmanas and cows, to show the special increase when Krishna appears. This refers particularly to the increase in Braja, since his appearance made the earth, waterfalls, brahmanas, birds, cows, and buffaloes in Braja prosper to the highest degree. At the end, Brahma describes the goal, that is, spreading prema bhakti. Two more paragraphs. The Lord takes away the darkness of processes contrary to bhakti. This is indicated by the words, O destroyer of demons on the earth. These are of two types. First, persons with deep demoniac nature opposing bhakti, which is the life of all people who wander about in the darkness of the material world. And the enemies of the Vrishnis like Kamsa. The Lord counteracts some by punishing their pride and others by killing them. This is for their benefit. O most merciful Lord Bhagavan, you encourage the devotees with bhakti. You can do this and no one else can. O Lord, who can do anything? And last paragraph. For my lifespan, I offer respect to you. I offer respect to you and to all your decorations, like gunja necklaces, earrings, peacock feather, and rice in your left hand. I offer respect even to the arka flower, which is not respectable. I offer respect to you, Krishna, endowed with all powers, the son of Nanda, full of the highest bliss. And the last commentary is just a few sentences. It's Jiva Goswami's. O Krishna, O Son, nourishing the families of Nanda and Vasudeva, O nourishing moon for the cows, brahmanas, devatas, and earth, O dispeller of the dense darkness of irreligion, O destroyer of the demons who have appeared on this earth, O Swayam Bhagavan, as long as this universe exists, I offer my obeisances unto you. So that's the final of his prayers. And then he gets ready for departing. That comes next. We'll go through about 8 more verses in this chapter. And as stated, this is a summary. It's 40 verses long, and so he's just doing Nam Sankirtan, just chanting names of Krishna. By the names of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna are remembered, the pastimes of Krishna are remembered, the potencies of Krishna are remembered, and from the name, depending, especially in this case, we've heard the whole Leela, it's bringing to mind or pointing in the direction of the pastime that Brahma has just experienced and the realizations he's just had. We hear in Shikshastaka, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. Bahuda, he has many thousands and millions of names. And each of these names, each one, has unlimited potencies. Nija Sarva Shaktis. Sarva Shaktis. His own potencies are in each and every name. So these names that are being spoken by Brahma, they're invoking a certain potency, or of the unlimited, all-potent Krishna, there's certain features of him, like Vrishnikula, it's just a name, like Vishnu Sahasranam, they're just names, but the names indicate something. And not only they have a meaning, but they also have a potency. So he, like the sun, has the effect of opening a lotus flower. So the sun-like effect of Krishna upon the Vrishni dynasty, and this is in two divisions, both Nanda and Vasudeva, he brings glory to those dynasties. And by speaking the name, by reciting the verse, or by speaking the name, any one of these names, there's potencies invested in those names, and those potencies act. Persons like me, that grew up in America and didn't even hear Krishna's name until I was in my 20s, it was like, you know, it's all new. At least in this lifetime, it's all new. And those of you with children, although you were born in India, your children were not born in India, and to them to a certain extent it's new, but because they're growing up in devotee families, they're hearing about these things from childhood, which is great fortune. And even if they don't understand all the things, the potencies are there because they're hearing from childhood. And it's an impression that's within, in contrast to those of us that didn't hear from childhood. We heard something else. We heard Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and, you know, everything else. Not Mahabharata and Ramayana and Srimad Bhagavatam stories. You know, the modern generation, it's, you know, Harry Potter and everything else. So, that was quick. Won't they call back? No?
Mostly they're promotional calls.
Oh, okay. Like the sun that rises in the Bhagavatam is compared to the sun that rises in the morning. There's the darkness of Kali Yuga that comes shortly after Krishna's departure. It's dark. Kali Yuga begins. But even in the darkness of Kali Yuga, as brilliant as the sun, the Bhagavatam appears, giving light. Like the sun gives light. In the daytime, in the darkness of Kali Yuga, the Srimad Bhagavatam gives spiritual light to anybody. And so whoever hears Srimad Bhagavatam, But take the bottom range. Sinful people. Janata agha, in the language of Canto 1. Janata agha. Sinful people. It gives light to the sinful people, or in this verse, as it's saying, God. But people that notionally accept that there's God and do ungodly things. Krishna appears to help those people too. Because, I mean, while the economy is sagging because of the coronavirus situation, and many businesses are having severe difficulty, and many of them will go out of existence, many of those businesses are centered on something sinful. Our Western culture has influenced the world, or the materialistic culture has influenced the world, not only Western. And degradation and degradation. So Kali Yuga is the dark age. So Krishna's appearance and the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam specifically is to give light in this age of darkness. And where that light comes in, sinful tendencies are curbed and people take to a virtuous life instead of sinful life. I mean, there's so many things. You know, alcohol and as was mentioned in the purport, the BBT purport. And the topic is too long and too big to get into, you know. The leading people, most of the leading people are leading people off the cliff, going in those areas of life. So, Krishna appears to help curb that. And then even specifically, the demoniac king like Kamsa and Shishupal, etc., Jarasandha, etc., he finishes them. But for their benefit, he liberates them. Such bad people get liberation. Wow. And the chanting of the holy name, by chanting of the holy name, one also becomes freed from reactions to past sins. Of course, people will do some more. But reactions to past sins is eradicated just by Namabhas. It's most astounding. And the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam from a proper source has such potency. Here, I'm hearing these pastimes of Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill and the whole, everything surrounding it. Indra's prayers, which are really astounding. And Brahma's prayers, which are filled with wisdom and understanding of the Vedas, although he's speaking with great humility that I don't understand. He understands. And he's become extremely humble, and he's ready to return to his service after offering his prayers. That's going to be discussed tomorrow when he departs. The mood when he departs. Krishna's mood and his mood. I think what I'm going to do is just read for conclusion. Just read again what Vishwanath says in his concluding statement. And Jiva Goswami's. Here's Vishwanath. May these prayers of Brahma, there's 40 of them, which are capable of destroying all the influence of the material world, which are the ocean of all conclusions about devotion, remain impressed upon my heart. And Jiva Goswami writes, because of the mercy of people who received the mercy of Chaitanya, I have explained according to my inclination the prayers of Brahma for their bliss. So Jiva Goswami is writing for the devotees, serving the devotees, anticipating that they'll become very happy just hearing topics of Krishna from a qualified person like Jiva Goswami. So let's see if there's some topics you'd like to discuss. There it is.
Hare Krishna. Guru Maharaj, one point that you mentioned at the end, the Phalastuti, that these prayers are capable of destroying all the miseries of the material world. So, is it when we read it, when we hear it, and when we try to apply it, all of these are just, even when we hear it again and again, it has the capacity to destroy.
We'll experience the potency just by hearing and hearing and hearing again. We'll feel the potency further by trying to apply what we've heard. Right? One of the homes that we visited, the lady of the house was saying, I read the Bhagavatam, but I can't even remember what I read. So how can I get to the point where I can remember what I read? So because if I can't remember it, how am I going to apply it? So that's just, there's purification to get to the point of knowing that I really need to apply it. To that, I need to remember it, to apply it. So there's purification, there's potency that one receives just by reading it again and again. Cleansing is taking place, and then further cleansing when we try to apply it, which means we need to understand it. And the initial thing that we understand is probably needs some adjusting to really get it right. Adjusting and refining and, you know, bringing in sharper focus what the message is. So it's both.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So there was one term, subtle atheism, in Lord Brahma's prayers.
There was what?
Subtle atheism. Atheism.
Subtle atheism.
Can you kindly elaborate on it?
You asked a similar question before about pride, and I responded. So the similar response about subtle atheism. It's not he had atheistic tendencies and that atheistic tendency was exposed. He did what he did not because of pride and atheism or even subtle atheism. The commentary is speaking like this because it appears to be like. So he was induced in a way that an atheist would do, challenge God. But he's not a God challenger, he's a devotee. He's most exalted devotee. So why did he behave that way? Well, and the explanation Prabhupada has given, I shared this now twice, this is the third time in the course of this discussion. Like Arjuna was induced by Krishna to be forgetful of his position so that we could hear Bhagavad Gita, so similarly, Prabhupada explained this in the temple room in Los Angeles about Brahma, that he was induced by Krishna to act this way, so that the whole Leela could be performed. There's many parts of the whole Leela. So Brahma could speak what Brahma speaks. So the cows could have Krishna as their calf. The mothers could have Krishna as their son. So we could hear Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, there are many purposes for his devotee Brahma to conduct himself the way that he did. So it's subtle atheism. I'm expanding what you asked. It's not like he was kind of like tinged or contaminated by atheism. He was behaving like one who is an atheist might behave, confronting and challenging God. But it was induced by Krishna to do what he did.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. So my main point of asking was...
I don't think your microphone is on.
So I wanted to see if I carry that from personal point of view, that so what is that subtlety that... So from personal application point of view, I was asking, but as I understood, Maharaj, you are saying that that tendency of challenging, and yesterday also you had mentioned that speculative approach. So for myself,
this is another question that you asked. So we shouldn't be inquisitive. And I said, no, you should be inquisitive. The problem wasn't being inquisitive. The problem is, what did he do with that inquisitiveness? He kidnapped the calves and cowherd boys, and he interrupted Krishna's pastimes because he was inquisitive. That's not good. There are other ways to be inquisitive. But he did it, went about it in the wrong way, in an offensive way. But Krishna had already forgiven him before he even came to speak what he spoke. So, does that respond to your question, specific question?
Yes, Maharaj. It was from my perspective that what I need to apply here.
Yeah, so what you need to apply is continue to be inquisitive, but as your question was speaking, that the inquisitive doesn't mean speculate. You want to go to authoritative sources and try to understand from authoritative sources, which isn't speculating. You could consider, maybe it's like this, is this correct? But then it's not, discovering something by the power of speculation. You want to receive descending knowledge. An inquisitive spirit seeking descending knowledge. Okay?
Yeah. I have just one more question, Maharaj. So, as you mentioned, Jarasandha and all those demonic kind of personalities, they still got liberation. And what to speak of devotees. So, is it just being in contact with Krishna, everything is fine? Because there are so many people who just don't know about Krishna, or they are indifferent to God. But even the demoniacs get liberation, and devotees, of course, they get mercy of Krishna.
Well, it's not that offenders always get liberation. People who are offensive don't always get liberation. They get very severe consequences.
Yeah, I guess my question was being indifferent to God, is that biggest offense or not?
No. Being opposed to God is. more than being indifferent. What happened, I don't need to say it again. What happened with Jarasandha and the persons mentioned is not with everybody who's has demoniac tendencies, they all get liberated. So that's pretty simple. Just be opposed to God and have demoniac tendencies and you get liberated. It's not like that.
So I was asking from the point of view that people know about God and His rules and regulations about goodness, but still they just behave like as if
they're more culpable than the people that don't know.
Right.
That's a different point than atheistic and demoniac.
Right. That is more offensive.
It's more culpable, punishable. People who don't know, it's one thing. People who know and do the wrong thing, that's more bad.
Thank you.
I mean, premeditated murder is different than accidental murder by law. You know, first degree murder and second degree and third degree, etc. And so premeditated, someone made a plan, they bought a gun, they had planned out how they're going to use the gun to kill somebody, and they killed somebody. It's different than, they got in a tiff, it's different. And they acted out of anger. It's different. Culpable law is more punishable for the premeditated than the circumstantial.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The question is like almost the same that Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu asked about this hearing again and again Srimad Bhagavatam and like also the reciting of these shlokas and the names. So like personally I feel that it is very important to make kids memorize all these stutis and all these names of Krishnas and different shlokas and all those things. So I would like to know, I would like to hear from you how important it is.
What do you want to hear?
How important it is for children to memorize all these stutis and like Brahma Samhita or Krishna's names or Narasimha's names, all those things.
A short answer is without knowing the meaning, it remains parrot-like.
But Krishna's names, I mean, they are the names.
Without knowing the meaning, it remains parrot-like.
Okay, even the name Govinda, Gopal, if we don't know the meaning of the name, then...
Your question specifically was having the children remember stutis, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And I'm responding. And I'll give... Just unplug the phone, right? Okay. I was in Italy one time giving a morning Bhagavatam class when there was a organization development committee meeting at the temple in Italy, one of the temples. And in the class I was speaking on this topic that the BBT, that then at the time that I was in Boston, the BBT hadn't been formed yet, it was ISKCON Press. And the person who ran the press was purchased, Advaita, Prabhupada disciple named Advaita, was in charge of the press. And Advaita told me, he asked Prabhupada, is it okay to print a little pocketbook Bhagavad Gita that just has the verses that you can put in your pocket and from time to time pull it out of your pocket and read the verses and put it back in your pocket. It'd be very convenient. And Prabhupada said no. Because the difference between one Bhagavad Gita translation and another is not the verses, it's the commentary. So without understanding the commentary, they won't understand and receive the proper understanding of Bhagavad Gita. He didn't want it. When I told the story, in the audience was Lakshmi Moni, who raised her hand and said, Prabhupada said the same thing about our children in Dallas. Because Prabhupada was headquartering himself in Los Angeles, the Dallas temple was purchased, they got the Gurukul up and going, and Prabhupada was very enthusiastic about the Gurukul, so he came. He showed them how to do the deity worship of Radhakala Chanji, and then they brought the children before Prabhupada to recite Bhagavad Gita slokas, thinking Prabhupada would be very pleased. And separately to the teachers, he said, this is not so important. They need to know the meaning. Because without knowing the meaning, they won't understand how to live it. So it didn't say don't do it, but without the understanding the meaning, it's incomplete. I've had lots of, I mean, there's nothing harmful. It's just incomplete. I've had lots of, let me just complete because you asked, so. I've had lots of experience when children will recite a sloka, and I ask them, do you know the translation? No. And if they know the translation, then do you know the meaning? No. There's nothing harmful. It's Krishna's words. But then, here's another, Subal, you know Subal, right? Okay. Subal and his wife Krishnarchana had moved into, when they married, they were living in Brooklyn, when they married, there was a space in the Tuaco temple where it was for householders to stay up on the upper floor, so they were given that space and they started running the Sunday school program. So many years ago. And they got to know the children that had been brought up doing what, you know, the recitation on Krishna Janmashtami, reciting some stutis and, you know, Gita Jayanti reciting. And they noticed that as soon as they were out of that kind of supervised activity, their Krishna consciousness didn't endure. Because it didn't really go in. I mean, it wasn't waste, but they weren't. So you could ask Subal about this sometime, because, you know, he has a lot of realization and appreciation for approaching in a different way. And those kids that they worked with are still, most of them, many of them, still practicing Krishna consciousness. Because it wasn't about, so there's nothing harmful. I'm sure they learned verses that Subal and Krishna Archana's students. Just like, you know, your son, who like Bhagavad Gita, it came from Premananda. At least he attributes it. But it wasn't just recite the slokas. So I'm not saying don't do it, and it's not important. I'm repeating what Prabhupada said, it's incomplete. So emphasis on understanding. And then with the understanding how to apply it, more than reciting. And there's auspiciousness created by reciting. But many people recite things, they don't know the meaning. A lot of the, you know, brahmanas, they can recite mantras like the wind, and nobody knows what's going on. And when somebody explains what's going on, it's like, wow, that's what that mantra meant, and that's what the procedure is, and you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so include helping them understand the meaning along with the memorization and recitation.
Yeah, and another question is, like, what about memorizing the names of Krishna?
What about it?
Names of Krishna.
What about it?
Like, I think that's good, memorizing, like, in many bhajans have only the names, or like, there are 1,000 names of Narasimha, 1,000 names of Krishna, those kind of things. Because then they are memorizing the names of Krishna.
Your question is the same question, my answer is the same answer. It generates auspiciousness. People who regularly recite Vishnu Sahasranam, for example. It's auspicious. It's transcendentally auspicious. It's dry, wet wood becoming dry wood. But it's not the same without knowing the meaning and becoming absorbed in the meaning and speaking the sound with that understanding of that meaning. Just like, you know, this particular verse. It's names of Krishna. But the names of Krishna are being unpacked, and it's just representing things that it's already, it's a bullet point that brings to mind so many things that have already been explained. But supposing you just have the bullet point without the explanation of what it's representing, it doesn't have the same effect. There's potencies in those names, no doubt. I would say have them understand one of the 1,000 names, and now you got something. Not just be able to recite back, this name means this.
Sure.
You follow?
Yeah, I follow. Thank you, ma'am.
And that's not easy. Recitation is easier than realization. Saying thank you is a lot easier than having gratitude in the heart. And a real teacher is one that awakens that character and quality and the deeper mood of devotion. That's the greater teacher, the greater challenge of parenting, the greater challenge of being a friend, being a well-wisher of others, awakening that higher consciousness.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have two questions. One question is, we say that the name of the Supreme Lord and his pastimes are same. So my question is, why is it then so difficult to chant the holy names on one hand compared to listening to a pastime of Krishna? And for example, when I chant, I can maybe focus for 3 or 4 rounds at the most, and after that it becomes mechanical. I'm aspiring to improve that, but that is not the case with the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. My level of engagement is different with the pastimes as it is with holy names. So what is the root cause and what can be done about it?
That's a nice question. Well, within, there's many things. Within the name, Krishna is all potency. And within the name, Krishna is all forms. Within the name, Krishna is all pastimes. So there's a pastime Like, you know, we've been morning and evening, two different pastimes, the Govardhan pastime and the Brahma Vimohan Leela pastime. So, and there's details and details. And, you know, we're sitting here for quite some time going into those details. And at least there's some people that are able to be, like, very attentive to hear and understand. But that's just one pastime that's within the name. Because within the name is everything. So, there's specifics connected to the name and the pastime that we're hearing. And then the name is very concentrated, and we're not purified enough, or our consciousness not subtle enough to, perceive and receive the potencies and the pastimes and the form and the qualities, etc., just from the name. But it's, you know, the concentrated name is everything. So I think that's an explanation of why, and, you know, what to do about it. Well, continue doing both. Because we're advised to do both. Here's what Bhaktisiddhanta says about this. Over here is the name, and over here is the description of the Bhagavad Katha or Krishna Katha. So he says the name is the Swarup, and over here is the Shakti. And we don't worship Krishna without Radha, we don't just chant the name without the Shakti of Shaktiman. So the Swarup Shakti of Krishna is this, the message of Bhagavatam, etc. So they go together. This enhances that. And we do them both.
Maharaj, thank you very much. Thank you.
It's a good question. I like your question.
Guru Maharaj, question from Radhika Priya. When I hear a couple of times the pastimes and still it is hard to understand the philosophy, will I still get the spiritual benefit of hearing?
Oh, yeah. And as was discussed earlier, you go on hearing and hearing again and hearing again, and more purification and more understanding, more realization. But purification is happening from the get-go. You know, the plant in the room is getting spiritual benefit just from our discussion. Not the same as you, and you may not be getting the same as Jiva Goswami, but benefit is there for sure.
Question from Kirti Prabhu. Is Brahma's mood toward Lord Krishna's indifference similar to the mood in the Sikshashtakam line, Adarshanam Mamahatam Karotuva?
Yeah.
Is this understanding correct?
Yes.
Question from Radha Valluri Mataji. Guru Maharaj, I am reading Krishna book and I have a question regarding Krishna and Akrura. Out of topic question.
Okay.
Akrura is a great devotee of the Lord, and by Lord's mercy, he was given a vision to have the darshan of Vaikuntha planets in the river Yamuna.
Yeah.
Now my first question is, why did Akrura participate in the cruel act of killing Satrajit along with Shatadvana and others, especially when the matter was settled between Krishna and Satrajit?
Our acharyas give the following answer. The acharyas' answer is the curse of the gopis when Akura took Krishna away, they said, you will also have to experience separation from Krishna like we have undergone. So this was all part of that drama of Akura being eventually separated from Krishna. It had to do with the jewel and the whole incident of Satrajit. There's some additional commentary that's not so often repeated, but it had to do with Kritavarma and Akura had some attraction for Satyabhama. They had had some discussions with Satrajit about marriage with his daughter. And he didn't say no and he didn't say yes, but it seemed to them that, so when it happened that Satyabhama married Krishna, there was some resentment towards Satrajit. It's not so clear, like, how that happened and how the dynamic went, but that was one of the sparks in the fire. And also the conspiring. Not only to take the jewel, because they wanted the jewel to go to Ugrasena because that's what Krishna wanted, but they were like in a get back mood towards Satrajit.
And my next question is that when the jewel was kept under the protection of Akrura, why Akrura was not able to offer it to Krishna voluntarily, though Krishna indirectly told him that father's property should be inherited to their heirs?
I'm not sure of this answer, but that the fact that he had the jewel would expose the fact that he was involved in the killing of Krishna's father-in-law. So he didn't want to expose the fact that he was involved in the killing of Krishna's father-in-law. Had he given it to Krishna, like, how'd you get the jewel?
Question from Govinda Mohini Mataji. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, when we are sharing messages of Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna consciousness, what should be our mood?
Mood.
M-O-O-D.
M-O-O-D. Mood. Okay.
I feel I tend to have expectations, especially from family and friends.
Well, one thing doesn't have anything to do with the other thing. Expectations from families and friends has nothing to do with the mood of how you hear Srimad Bhagavatam.
No, while sharing the messages.
By sharing the message with them. Oh, okay. What should be the mood that I should have when sharing the message of Bhagavatam with family and friends? Well, it depends on the family member or the friends. I mean, a very innocent manner of sharing is, I just read something wonderful. And, you know, bubbly, innocent, childlike enthusiasm, just sharing something that you read that you found very wonderful. But, you know, it depends on the family and the friend. Some family members may, you know, throw you in a closet. I don't know. Depends on the family member and the friend. Okay.
Question from Vishalaksha Prabhu. Guru Maharaj, Lord Brahma is saying the Nama Sankirtana means chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or the names like Govinda, etc. What steps we need to take to come to Namabha stage?
I don't understand the question. The punchline is, what does it take to go beyond the Namabha stage? That's his question?
to come to Namabha stage. Not beyond.
What does it take to come to Namabha? Well, you're already there. Just keep chanting the way that you are and you're there. The shadow of the name. So maybe you can think about your question and word it a little differently so that I can understand if you're asking differently how to respond to your question. You come to Namabha stage by taking the name and making an effort to chant with attention and devotion. That's how we come to the Namabha stage. Strive, at least. Although we're inattentive, we strive.
And the first part of the question is, maybe I'll repeat, is Brahma is saying the Nama Sankirtana, whether he means it as chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra or the names like Govinda, Gopal, etc.
He's saying other names of Krishna, neither one of those two. The names are right in the verse.
And both are considered as Nama Sankirtana.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Okay. Just names and reciting names. As Prajabhumi, she knows about reciting names.
Because I keep wondering for the children, they need variety all the time.
Okay.
If I read only Bhagavad Gita with them, they can't concentrate for more than half an hour or like that.
20 minutes, 15 minutes, 5 minutes, 3 minutes.
They don't want to do it all.
Okay. So you tell stories and you make it attractive that way. So they can get the meaning, embellish that way, not just variety and then... Okay, next question.
Question from Shashireka Mataji. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, reading Bhagavatam is very pious activity and it washes away our anarthas. But I feel that I read Bhagavatam because I am very fond of reading Shastra. But I think I don't read to please Krishna. How can I cultivate the mood to read Shastra to please Guru and Krishna?
By desiring to, that's how. And you cultivate that desire. You just work on that for the pleasure of principle, and for the pleasure of principle, it grows. Next.
Another question from Shashreka Mataji. This is related to Ramarago Prabhu's question. This is related to that Prabhu's question on chanting and hearing about Leela. Is it also true that we can focus more to hearing than chanting because mind likes variety?
Well, not, that's, yes and no. Because all variety is there in Krishna's name, but we can't discern it. More variety is there in Krishna's name. All variety is there in Krishna's name, but we can't discern it. So, yes and no.
Okay. This, I think, couple of follow-up questions on the Shyamantaka Jwala. Is there a hidden significance of the jewel story? Is there a hidden yogic meaning? Does the jewel allude to something deeper? For example, bhakti, and that it should be offered only to Krishna, etc.
I didn't find that in our Acharya's commentary, so I wouldn't go there, personally.
And Krishna himself mentions to Akrura that he knows that the jewel is with him.
Yes.
And he also asks him to show to Satyabhama and other family members for their darshan.
Yes.
Okay. But being in the exalted position of having the darshan, the vision of Vaikuntha planet, why does not he think that Krishna is one to possess this jewel?
Why did Akura think that Krishna did not want to possess the jewel?
No, Guru Maharaj. Akura, having got the darshan, the vision of Vaikuntha planet, why does Akura not think that Krishna is the one to possess this jewel?
It's not that he was thinking otherwise. He had the jewel, and he's implicated in theft and murder. And he's hiding his activity of theft and murder. And I think that's enough on the Shyamataka jewel topic.
Yes, ma'am. A question from Radha Kunjabihari Prabhu. What is BBT purport and how it is different from Srila Prabhupada's purports?
How is what?
How it is different from Srila Prabhupada's purports.
Which one?
BBT purport.
No, Prabhupada completed Srimad Bhagavatam through Canto 10, Chapter 13. Starting with Canto 10, Chapter 14, it's Prabhupada's disciples because Prabhupada had left the world. That's the difference. Prior to that, it's Prabhupada's purports. After that, it's not Prabhupada's purports. In the BBT publication.
There is one comment. Hare Krishna, from Jayanti Balakrishnan. Hare Krishna Maharaj, these questions and your answers are inspiring in the sense that it helps me to enter into the science of Krishna and thus focus my mind on Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. We're done. Anything in conclusion?
Maharaj, it is a little bit off topic, but still it is related to reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So, how far it is good to create a positive pressure on ourselves for doing some, say for example, taking up some exams so that I'll be reading. I want to create a positive pressure on myself because it is not on spontaneous level. So how, is it okay? Is it recommended?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Maharaj.
Beware of, fruitive tendency and fanning fruitive tendency. But, having goals and standards and so forth, and that's good.
Okay. Yeah. And just one more I had, that during this corona time, I was inspired, Maharaj, to read Chant and Be Happy on public forum. So I was doing it for 5 to 7 minutes every day with one round of chanting. So is it okay? One thing, and will there be any copyright issues if I read from...
No.
So is it okay?
Yes, it's okay.
Okay.
Now I want to hear from your son. Out of all that you've heard... Because you're a little distracted, but I know that you're a good listener anyways. Out of all that you heard, what is going to stick with you? What's like, are you going to remember and carry with you tonight and tomorrow?
I feel like you shouldn't try to challenge Krishna. You shouldn't try to go against him anytime. And whatever he's doing, you should always think of it in a good way, not in a bad way.
Okay. Fantastic. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.